Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It's Friday, so we're joined as we have been for much of the last couple of months with Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, it is great to talk to you again and you have you on again this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Ted. I hope you're doing well, and thank you for this time.
It's always great to talk to you. I always like when you refer to it. This is your chance to talk to your patients on this Friday morning and each Friday and talk about things. Boy, school and school opening this fall remains a big thing, and that's been something over the months that you've been talking to school districts and superintendents and school districts about, and those talks, I know, continue.
Sure enough, Ted, for the past month, we've had an organized ad hoc committee with all five school divisions represented in Planning District 16 to talk about what does it mean to open up schools in a COVID-19 endemic state. That is, when we know that the virus is around, still here, and we may easily anticipate that COVID may be brought into the schools. How do we protect our children? How do we keep our schools safe? How do we minimize the risk of transmission of disease in the schools if we're going to open up? The purists would say, just keep everybody at home. Let's stop the spread of this disease. Just everybody stay home. Well, that's no longer practical. It's clear that we're not overwhelming our hospitals today. There's a steady state of patients coming in, recovering and going home from this COVID-19 disease. And our businesses are opening up, our communities are opening up, and it's likely that our schools are going to open up this coming semester. So how do we prepare for that? And how do we make sure our schools are safe? And how do we help parents prepare for that? So I will note that our schools are going to look a little different this next school year. Social distancing will be one of the themes in the school. So you'll see classroom desks 6 feet apart, which means that a classroom can only hold about half as many students as they did in prior years. So what does that mean in terms of the school schedule? It may mean that the schools will have to go to a split schedule with one group of students coming on like Monday and Wednesday and another group of students coming on Tuesday and Thursday, something like that, or spreading the school day out more. These are decisions that the schools have to make. Of course, as a public health advisor to the schools, we are advising them, you must social distance, reduce the risk of spread of this disease. Secondly, everybody's going to be wearing masks. We're encouraging not just the faculty, but all the students to wear masks. And for parents to put that mask on their children when they drop them off at school or when they put them on the school bus. Washing hands is going to be an ongoing theme, of course, because this is one of the best ways we can help prevent spread of the disease. And before children or faculty can come in the building, there will probably be symptom checks. You know, somebody at the front door who's checking for temperature and just reviewing very quickly with the students any symptoms consistent with COVID-19 before they even come in the building. These are measures we're putting into place that the schools will be putting into place, and it'll vary from school division to school division. We're being advisors in terms of how to reduce the spread of disease in your schools, but the schools are the ones that are responsible for making sure all this is carried out. So I'm confident that our schools are very serious about providing a safe environment for our school children this next school year.
you have said all along, when we first started talking about this, probably a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, that you thought this could happen. And as you go down those lists, like you say, things are going to be much different. But that's all doable. Those things are all doable to get kids back into school, and that really is important.
Yes. So that's a little bit about what the schools are doing. But Ted, why don't we talk about what parents can do? Because we're all in this together, right?
Yep.
It's not just up to the schools to prevent spread of disease. What can parents do? First and foremost, I'm recommending that children with underlying chronic medical conditions just stay home this next semester. I know that's easy to say, may not be so easy to do, because parents, particularly single parents, how are they supposed to get child care, you know, go to work, all of that, those complexities of managing domestic affairs. I know that's a challenge, but those children who are at most risk for having a severe form of this disease are those children with chronic underlying medical conditions, those who may be on cancer chemotherapy and have a compromised immune system, those with severe asthma. And I'm talking about kids who have to be on medications, who may have visited the emergency room once or twice in the last year. That implies an unstable form of asthma. So moderate to severe asthma, those kids ought to stay home. Kids with chronic heart disease, chronic liver disease, or chronic kidney disease. These kids are the ones that are most likely. Otherwise, Ted, the rest of our kids handle this disease very well. The data is clear. The research on this, whether you look at the data from China, Europe, New York, whatever, children handle this disease very well. Most are going to be probably asymptomatic, which is a whole other subject about how do you manage a disease and transmission of a disease in school when half of the disease is asymptomatic. That is, kids are infected, can transmit the disease, but have no symptoms.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a challenge. But parents, the things that parents can do, first of all, again, keep your children home who have underlying chronic medical conditions. It's just one more semester, just 6 months, because we're going to have a vaccine probably at the end of this calendar year or the beginning of the next calendar year. There's a lot of research going on in the U.S. and across the world. There's lots of research. And a lot of these researchers are sharing information, and the feds are promoting this vaccine development campaign. So the development is moving along very, very quickly. There are a couple of human studies being done right now on vaccines in China and in Canada. So hopefully we will have a vaccine at the end of this year. So it's just one more semester, six more months to keep those kids at home. And I'm talking about those with underlying medical conditions. So what else can parents do? Make sure any of their children who are sick, that they stay home. And this is a theme that it's not new. I mean, we've always said that. The parents about their children who are ill, don't take them to school. Now, with COVID-19, it may be a little bit more subtle. Even that little runny nose, that subtle cough, that clear, vague fatigue. Parents ought to be monitoring their children for fever and other symptoms of COVID-19 and keep them home if they're sick. Do not take them to school. As they drop their children off at school or on the school bus, give them their mask, make sure they know how to put on a mask properly. And I would suggest that they have their children wash their hands before they leave home. So these are some simple things. Well, keeping your kids at home may not be so simple, because then you've got to rearrange work, rearrange household and your timing and I know that can be very complex and disruptive. But this will really help us, one, prevent the spread of disease in our schools, and secondly, protect our most vulnerable children. And that's what we all ought to be doing, is protecting those who are most vulnerable, most likely to suffer a severe form of this illness, and that's those children with chronic underlying medical conditions.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Great stuff here, and much more ahead. We'll continue this conversation. I got some questions for you, and we will continue to talk about schools this morning, especially as we continue along. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubert.
Dr. Donald Stern, in the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District this morning, as we talk about schools. One of the things that jumped out at me, Dr. Stern, as you were talking about the list, and especially with parents and keeping your kids home, even if just for a runny nose and things like that, that in this time that you do really want to err on the side of safety, whether that's sending kids to school or whether that's yourself going to work.
Correct. Very good point. COVID-19 is endemic, which means it's in the population. It's here to stay, and we're going to learn to live with it and work with it. But those who are sick need to stay home.
As we talk about going back to school, what's going to happen when we get into a situation where a child in school is found to be positive? What do you see? What do you see happening?
Well, that's a very good question, Ted. We've talked about what the schools are doing to prepare to make schools safe and minimize the spread of disease. But even with those efforts, we will have a child with COVID-19 in the schools, largely because we know a substantial amount of this disease is asymptomatic. That is, the child would be infected, but not have symptoms of the disease and yet able to transmit the disease. But still, some child will then become symptomatic during the school day. So what's going to happen if that happens? I mean, the school administration will not be able, neither will parents know whether their child is asymptomatic with disease. That's why we wash hands. That's why we put on a mask to prevent spread of disease. But, yeah, good question. What do we do if a child shows up with then symptoms and is in the school? Well, we've worked out a set of recommendations for our schools in the event that happens. And what would happen is that student who then is, or faculty, who's recognized with symptoms would immediately be escorted to an isolation room, a room that's set aside in the school building next to an entrance exit. Parents will be called to come pick up their child. Of course, the school administration will be notified. And thirdly, the school will call the health department, which means that will kick in an investigation, a conversation with the school nurse about, well, what symptoms does this child have? And is there the necessity for the parents to come pick up this child now? And so that will kick in a process for this child to be picked up, to go home, recommendations for the parents then to take the child to their primary care provider or other medical provider and have a COVID-19 test run. Depending on the results of that test, will help guide the rest of our strategy. But there is some conversation going on. Well, what do you do with the kids in the rest of the kids in that classroom?
Right.
Well, think about it. Once the child who is symptomatic is removed from the classroom, then the rest of the kids are at no more risk for transmission of disease than before. So we're not going to empty out the school. We're not recommending that they empty out the classroom and have parents come pick up their kids. We can wait till the end of the day and let those kids who are contacts to a symptomatic child go on home. Now, you know, CDC and state guidelines would provide that a child who is exposed to somebody with COVID-19 would be put into quarantine for 14 days. But think about it. We've got a child here who's symptomatic. We don't know that that child immediately has COVID-19 or not. We need the test results. So the debate right now is whether those children should start quarantine immediately or wait till the test results come back, which may be a day or two. I'm recommending on the side of caution that these children who may be at risk, high risk for acquiring the disease because of the high risk exposure, that they just stay home until we get the test results. If the test results are negative, those children can go back to school. Fine, we're in good shape. If the test results of the index case, that is the child who was symptomatic in the classroom, if it's positive, then those children simply need to be quarantined at home for the full 14-day duration and monitored for the onset of symptoms. So that's the plan if a child becomes symptomatic during the school day. So schools have worked out a process to prevent, minimize the spread of disease in the schools. But if somebody shows up positive, which will happen, Ted, and I don't want parents to go crazy about this, but if we're going to open up schools, we will have COVID-19 in the schools. But we've got a process developed and will be in place when school opens.
And I guess one of the things then, Dr. Stern, that I would think that you would recommend just because of that particular case that we just talked about is that you don't change classrooms a lot. When kids get to school, they eat lunch in their classroom, they stay in that classroom because so then they're contained, and if that kind of situation occurs, then that class is the one who's quarantined. You're not having to go around and involve the whole school.
Well, good point. Now, I can't tell you exactly how each school is going to implement our recommendations.
Okay.
But what you've described is what we are recommending, that children come in one entrance of the school, they go immediately to their classroom, and everything happens in that classroom all day. Now, this is going to be difficult. It's going to take patience on the school administration, the teacher's part, to manage this classroom without kids going out and mixing and all of that during all day. It's going to be a major shift in the way in which we manage a classroom. But I am recommending that the students go into a classroom and that's where they stay. That the school work out a process to bring lunch to those classrooms. Of course, at the end of the day, all those classrooms get cleaned. Not a deep cleaning necessarily, but contact surface cleaning, every classroom. We minimize traffic in the hallway. That classroom is assigned one bathroom. So you're not mixing kids. You're not mixing exposure opportunity in the school, that you're minimizing the opportunity for this virus to spread from person to person.
And I guess one of the other things, no sharing of pencils or pens or just no sharing of anything, and just try to keep everybody to themselves.
Right. Can you imagine trying to do this in a first grade class?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I am. And I was going to ask you on another note, when we talk about what parents can do, I would think that especially for elementary kids, that the parents, as best you can, talk to your kids about, you know, you're not going to be able to get close to your friends and that, you know, that it's going to be a little bit different and maybe try to model it or work on it at home. Because I do think about this with elementary school students.
Well, that's very good advice, Ted, and that parents have that conversation with their kids before they ever go to school. No touching, no hugging, no playing games where they're close together. This is going to be difficult for the elementary school teacher to keep those kids apart. But, you know, you may have the same thing in high school. Some high school students are going to say, you know, this is nothing. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And that's not a good attitude. That's not a good approach, because this virus loves to spread between people to people, from person to person. This is a relatively highly infectious disease. So we need to put on our masks, wash our hands, stay away from others right now.
Well, and maybe
we can run our schools in that kind of environment.
Yeah.
It's just going to be that. It's going to be difficult.
Although, and you think though, with school starting in August, and you look at it some in the early fall, maybe you can go outside and have some time, even do some teaching outside and help the process.
Well, there's an idea.
So you can add that, and you don't have to give me credit for it. You can add that as an idea. But
okay.
As superintendents, I mean, this does go back to what this goes back to what all superintendents that I've heard and have talked to about this are telling parents and staff, when you come back to school this fall, this is going to be nothing like the type of school that you're used to. We're not going to have a set start time and a set end time. It's going to be way different this year, and go in and realize that.
It is going to be very different.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District here. We need to take a break. We will continue this and get into a couple of other things this morning while we have Dr. Stern with us. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, here with us this morning as we've been talking about schools this morning. We'll get into a couple of other things. But I guess the real thing about this is, Dr. Stern, is just for parents to start thinking in these terms and talking to their kids about it, and if necessary, making sure that their kids are practicing and getting ready with a mask and talk to them, especially younger kids, about staying away from each other.
Well, I think that's great advice, Ted. Yes, sir.
So just it really is just a situation of getting ready. You and I talked last week. I mean, we could do another whole show on just buses, but you had talked about how that there are ways to get around buses, but there is the number of people on buses is going to be less just because of social distancing.
Right. We're recommending social distancing on the school buses, but there's been a couple of scenarios that have been floated out across the Commonwealth. One of which is to place children every other seat, which would reduce the bus capacity to about below one third of the total bus capacity. And it's next to impossible for school districts with the current number of drivers and buses to get all the children to school with that kind of scenario. We've come up with another plan so that children are staggered in every other seat, with children from the same household sitting in the same seat. That's okay,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, they're living with each other. So what difference does it make if they sit in the same seat together? They've already exposed to each other, so that doesn't make any difference. And then stagger them. So it reduces the bus volume down to about 50% of capacity. And I think we might be able to pull it off. I'm not sure what the school divisions are going to do with that advice. We are recommending some social distancing in the school buses. And, of course, then same thing with the classrooms, that after use, those buses are cleaned, the contact surfaces are cleaned. But this will work well, again, especially if sick children are brought to school, and as I'm recommending also that children with chronic underlying medical conditions not come to school. Otherwise, the rest of the kids, even if they get this disease, will generally handle it fairly well. The data is clear on that. I can't promise it for any one child, but the data is pretty clear that children handle this disease pretty well.
What about teachers who are either teachers that have the underlying conditions or even just age considerations?
Right. I think the school divisions are offering to teachers to make that decision themselves, whether they want to remain in the building, continue their employment, or maybe make other arrangements. It's a little easier for universities where the teachers then can offer classes remotely.
Yeah.
So they're not around a group of students. It's hard to do that in a public school setting. So it's a good question, Ted. Each teacher and school administration are going to have to deal with that question.
Dr. Donald Stern with us this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. This is just interesting stuff, and as we talk each week, it's just interesting the more information you have this week. So it's obvious that lots of thought and discussion is going on, and so we'll continue to keep everyone updated as we go along. On to a couple of other things. Today, there's some testing being offered, tests in Caroline County.
Yes, Ted. Well, today we kick off our community testing campaign. It begins in Caroline County. We do have testing events planned for Fredericksburg, Stafford County as well. We'll be announcing those more in the future. But today we have a community testing event with about 400 test kits available in the Dawn area of Caroline County. This will be at Second Mount Zion Baptist Church at 31220 Old Dawn Road in Hanover. Hanover, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's going to be a drive-through event, so folks don't have to get out of their car. We have asked folks to pre-register, but we're also allowing some pre-registration today at the event, some registration at the event. So people will be able to stay in the car the whole time. Everyone needs to be wearing a mask that arrives wearing it. It's the only time I say wear a mask in the car, you know, because you are interfacing with somebody. The tester who's outside the car will also be wearing a mask and appropriate personal protective equipment. Any test results will be followed up. If there's a positive test result, that would be followed up with an investigation by public health. So that person who's positive will be called by the health department to inform them of their test results. And then we would do case contact workup, find out if there's any other people that may be at risk for disease who've that person is exposed.
And again, now this is in Caroline County, but like these are going to be offered throughout the health district. And if you go to the Rappahannock Area Health District Facebook page, you can find out more information and even sign up there, or our Facebook page has information too. So as the testing increases, these are just some of the things that to watch and look for around the community these days.
Right, and you know, Ted, part of the reason why we're doing community testing like this is because there are lots of folks that they can't drive, they don't have money to buy gas to put in the car to drive,
mm-hmm.
Don't have a car. So we're trying to provide an opportunity for folks who may otherwise not had an opportunity to be tested to receive a test by us bringing the test to them as easily as we can. And working with the church and others in the community, we've been able to bring these things together and inform those who may not have easy access to testing.
Again, it's in Caroline County today. Again, check out, if you go to the Rappahannock Area Health District Facebook page, all kinds of information on this testing. You mentioned that having masks, you know, you have to have a mask, and you know, at this point, wear it in the car for this. I've never seen anything like this, though, that just the anger over masks continues. And if anything, I think it continues to grow.
Well, you know, Ted, we live in a country where independence is highly valued. That is what I perceive as my independence. And unfortunately, there's also kind of a twisting of the concept of freedom in America. The traditional meaning of freedom means I have the freedom to do what's right, not what some people now think freedom is to do whatever I want. You know, that's not what freedom in America is really all about. But some people think, well, I could do whatever I want. Leave me alone. I'm free. So, you know, the masks, let's remind folks that the masks aren't about you. They're about other people. It's to prevent you from spreading the virus from yourself to other people. You may have the disease and not even know it because we know a substantial amount of this disease. One study says 35%. I've seen another study up to 50% may be asymptomatic. That is, have been infected, have the disease in its asymptomatic form, not having any signs or symptoms, no fever, no body aches, no cough, but still able to transmit the disease to others. So that's why we ask people to put on masks and wash hands frequently and keep their distance, because you could be transmitting this disease to others. Well, and, so put on the mask, you know, get over it. I'd say get over it. Just put on a mask for a while. Once we get the vaccine and people have the opportunity to make that choice, this vaccine will not be forced on people. People will have the opportunity to voluntarily accept this vaccine. So just wear a mask until we get a vaccine, please.
Well, and as the weeks go on, and as we talk about, it's obvious that wearing the mask, washing your hands, and in the social distancing, boy, those are the things you follow those, and those are the things that give you a real chance to stay healthy.
Right, and you know, we see those pictures. It reminds me of those pictures of folks in Asia, you know, China, Vietnam, Korea, and everybody's got a mask on.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that all about? Well, that's because in more so in Asian cultures, there's this concept of community, where community care is a very high value. And, you know, in America, individualism seems to be a higher value. Let's care about our community and others in our community. Let's put on a mask, huh?
Yeah. No, when this first came up in the mask, I mean, I've said before, I had never really worn one much besides now these days, but when it first came up, I thought, well, if that's something that's going to work, and if it's going to help keep others safe, I'll do it. And I didn't know it would become so controversial, but it certainly has.
Right. Well, it reminds me of when seatbelts became law. I could not get my parents to put on a seatbelt.
That's true.
It just wasn't their culture. And my mother constantly felt uncomfortable. She would at least put it on, but she would constantly whine about having the seatbelt on her because it was just different. It felt different. For you and I, maybe, who kind of grew up, well, you know, actually I was quite an adult by the time seatbelts were required, but I feel like I'm going to fall out of my seat if I don't have a seatbelt on, you know?
Yep. You're right.
So, much of this is just cultural. We're not used to wearing masks. You know, we think it inhibits our breathing. We think it muffles our speech. I just ask that people put on a mask to help prevent the spread of this disease right now. 6 more months, please. We'll have a vaccine the end of this year or the beginning of next calendar year. And if you'll get your vaccine, you can take your mask off. How about that? Is that a deal?
Deal. We'll virtually shake hands on that one. And yes,
yes, sir.
I will take that. Dr. Sturdy here with us this morning. Before we take a break, every week we talk about it, the local health district staff and just the effort, the Herculean effort that your staff continues to do. Well, and especially as more testing takes place and the contact tracing takes place, just again, a shout out to what the local health district staff is doing in our community.
Well, Ted, I appreciate you bringing that up. I try to remember to bring up and offer accolades to my staff whenever we do these talks. But I continue to be impressed and am very proud of the staff at the Rappahannock Area Health District in all five of our localities and their work, not only to address COVID-19, reducing the spread of the disease in our community and trying to preserve life, but also continue to run some vestige of our core public health services. It's a tremendous amount of work for our staff. Just think about that data. Now, I know a lot of people get their data from the state website. I'll tell you the truth. I don't look at the state website.
I don't either.
I look at the data my staff generate. Now, part of the data that my staff put together comes off the state website, but also a state database and another database run by the Hospital and Healthcare Association. And that helps me understand how my patient, which is the community, is doing. And then that data is shared with lots of folks, not only our local governments, but folks like you, Kathy Dyson with the Freelance Star, and others in the community. So just putting that data together. And every day, I mean, even over the weekend,
I was going to say,
ask staff to work through the weekend on
yep.
this.
7 days a week, I hear from Eileen, and she sends those numbers to me faithfully.
There you go. We've worked tirelessly with our long-term care centers for months. Unfortunately, our worst-case scenario has happened in the last couple of weeks with one facility that's had a major outbreak with over 60 residents now positive, 30 staff positive for COVID-19. I think there's about 8 of their residents who are now in the hospital right now. They've had 9 deaths amongst their residents. This is Carriage Hill, and I can't imagine trying to run that facility right now, but we're in daily contact with these folks, the administration and their medical team, helping them to manage their patients, helping them manage the infection control strategies in the facility, again, to preserve life and to minimize deaths in that facility. But it's, the virus just got ahead of them really very quickly, and we're trying to control for that right now. And that creates a substantial amount of work for my staff. We're doing this testing event today. Our staff mm-hmm. are highly involved in that, in organizing that and orchestrating that. I thank the Virginia National Guard because that team is coming to actually administer to collect the samples. They're a wonderful group to work with. They're very well organized. They know their job. But this is just another thing that adds more demand of time for our staff. But, they're quite willing to do it. And once they understand that this is just part of our job, they just jump into it and then, it's something I'm not having to orchestrate or demand. This is our staff who are working, understanding their role, the concept of preventing spread of disease, and they're doing it. They're doing a great job.
Dr. Donald Stern with the Rappahannock Area Health District here this morning. We need to take a quick break, and we'll all wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Our timing is often pretty well. We've done this enough now. And I cut you off, though, as soon as I jumped in there. You started to go into another sentence. I'll let you finish whatever you were going to say there before I rudely cut you off a second ago, Dr. Stern.
Oh, no problem, Ted. I can get on a roll when it comes to talking about the great work the staff at the Rappahannock Area Health District are doing. You know, we talked about the team that's monitoring the data and providing these data reports on the incidence of disease, the trending of the disease, the trending of hospitalizations. It's all a way in which I monitor how my patient is doing, and that's done every day. We talked about our work with long-term care facilities, our testing events, but also, you know, we've got a team of folks who are trying to work on messaging and getting the message out. I have a public information officer who's spent time with you to organize these radio spots. She works with the Freelance Star. We have folks who communicate internally with our staff and then external with other partners in the community. And then just handling the regular duties of the health department, which we're still providing some clinical services. We're still doing on-site sewage program. So if somebody wants to build a house, they can still get a permit processed. We're still offering WIC services. So that's a huge amount of work also that our staff continue to do.
Wow, there's a lot. Thank you to the staff with the Rappahannock Area Health District, keeping us safe and just continuing to do those things. We've only got a couple of minutes left. Phase three, the guidelines have been posted. The governor said yesterday he's not ready for us to go to phase three, but that is on the horizon.
I believe it is. As long as things stay stable as they are now, or we continue to see a downward trend in the data, in the incidence of this disease, then I think the governor will feel more comfortable with going to phase three. But if folks want to know what phase three looks like, the details are available on the governor's website.
We only have about a minute and a half to go, but last week you talked about revive our community, and you broke down the word revive. I'll let you finish with that because it was great information.
Well, sure, Ted. I really look forward to us reviving our communities now. Now I think everybody does. Looking forward to going back to work, looking forward to going back to school, getting back into what some consider more normal life. So, let's revive our community. R would be ride it out. We still got to ride out this virus. It's here. It's with us to stay. E is endemic. That means it's widely spread in our community. We're not going to be able to get rid of it. It's here, and we're just going to have to learn how to live with it and work with it. But V is for vaccine. We'll have a vaccine probably towards the end of this year or again, as I said, early next calendar year. So we're going to start a immunization campaign, and vaccinate those who are most vulnerable first. So I want to see first in line the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions to get that vaccine. And then last, everybody could get back to normal. That's our hope. And let's revive our community.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director of the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Ted.
For listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.